Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for June 21st, 2024. Half of MAF travelers flew Southwest in May by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. Southwest Airlines accounts for nearly half of all travelers flying out of Midland International Air and Spaceport. A total of 33,753 passengers chose to fly Southwest in May, according to monthly data released by the City of Midland. That's 49.9% of the 67,684 passengers who made their way through the terminal at MAF. We appreciate our customers choosing to fly us from Midland, a Southwest spokesperson told the Reporter Telegram. We definitely appreciate their support as we connect them to the people and places that are important in their lives. Just more than a quarter of passengers flew American Eagle, 17,367 in May, and about 20% used United Airlines to get to their destination, 12,722. Delta Airlines took 3,842 passengers to Austin Bergstrom International, its only route at MAF. Southwest takes passengers to five destinations: Austin, Bergstrom, Hobby Airport in Houston, Love Field in Dallas, Denver International, and Harry Reid International in Las Vegas. According to Southwest, the Texas-headquartered airline offers about 1,800 seats per day at MAF. American Eagle travels to Dallas-Fort Worth International and Phoenix Sky Harbor International. United takes travelers to Bush Intercontinental in Houston and Denver International. Airline boardings in Midland jump nearly 14% in May compared to this time last year, the city said. There have been 475,334 total passengers so far in the 2023-24 fiscal year and a 12.2% increase fiscal year over year. Net parking revenue at MAF totaled $717,000 in May, raising the fiscal year to date tally to $5,302 million. 139 dogs saved and counting by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Karen Patterson compares her workday to an airstrip at DFW where planes are coming at you from different angles. She's the founder and executive director of Fix West Texas, a nonprofit organization that focuses on lowering the euthanasia rate and suffering of pets in the community. Patterson, a Waco native, moved to Midland with her family when her husband took a job in the oil and gas industry. They have lived in Midland for almost 10 years now. About 5 years after moving to the Tall City, Patterson came across Roscoe, a rescue dog, at the gas station, which then kick-started her journey with Fix West Texas. Now Patterson continues her mission with the Fix West Texas team, where each day really is as busy as an airport, especially since they are preparing for a new adventure, moving to a bigger location. The Midland Reporter Telegram recently sat down with Patterson to discuss her journey at Fix West Texas, the challenges she's faced, and life in Midland. What inspired you to start Fix West Texas? I came across a little pit bull on the side of the road that had been hit by a car, so we gathered him up and got him medical treatment. Once he was well, we took them to the shelter, and I was ready to sign him up for their foster program, but they let me know that they don't have a foster program. In fact, they were a high-kill shelter, so he would likely be euthanized if I surrendered him to them. That was pretty eye-opening and shocking to me. I started doing some open records requests and digging around for information and learned that, yes, Midland and Odessa together are about 10% of all euthanasia here in Texas, so we're a very high kill area. I started trying to figure out what was different about this area than other areas I lived in previously that didn't have these issues. A big part of that was there's no access to low-cost spay and neuter. A lot of people were not able to spay and neuter their pets because they just couldn't afford it, so that's what I did. I worked on trying to establish low-cost spay and neuter here. At first, I wanted to work with the city and have the city have that done down at the shelter like other cities, but that was just a hard no. I didn't want to give up, so I just kept on, and we decided we would do it ourselves. That's when I found a vet in Dallas and made an appointment that we would have a spay and neuter clinic. The location was to be announced because I did not have a location. I met a bunch of people on the internet, and one was Lori Van Hooser, and she helped me find a place. That's when we just decided we would establish a board and make sure that the service was provided to the community going forward. What are some of the challenges that you faced while at Fix West Texas? Fix West Texas is really about making a social change. Yes, we do provide services, but more than anything, we're trying to make a social change where we elevate the importance of pets locally. And with that, we, of course, face resistance because a lot of people don't like change. That's probably been the biggest struggle, is staying true to our mission and pressing forward and just letting the naysayers kind of fall on their side. How has Midland changed during your time here? When we moved here, it was during a boom. A lot of the apartments didn't exist. The day that we were looking for an apartment, we were only two available in all of Midland. We picked one, and that was that. Now, of course, you see tons of apartments, tons of hotels and restaurants. There weren't many restaurants, and now there's so many more. So the city has changed like that. The Midland-Odessa area, it just seems like a big melting pot of people from all over the United States and all over the world. That's the biggest way it's changed, the growth. I also remember during the boom, at the time, we only had one HEB, and when we would go to HEB, we couldn't be picky. Whatever bread they had left, that's the bread you picked. Whatever chips they had left, that's what you bought. Don't be so picky because, yes, there's bread, but it might not be the kind you like. When we moved here, I would say there were limited resources, not only housing, but even groceries and stuff like that. What's one lesson you've learned while living in Midland that others may benefit from? One of the biggest things I've learned is our community is very generous. If people know you have a need, so many people in our community are able to meet that need, regardless of what it is. I think that is just really something very special about this area that I have not seen in every area that I've lived in. What does Midland mean to you? I would say that family and independence. What I love the most about Midland is that the people are so nice. You really do feel like a community with everybody. It's a big melting pot. You have people at different socioeconomic levels from different backgrounds, but by and large, everybody respects each other's differences. Since the majority of us are transplants, I think we show each other that we care a little more as a community, and it's stronger because of that. Hardly any of us are actually born and raised here. For the independence, I love Midland because I can do what I want, when I want, how I want, for the most part, because there aren't a lot of restrictions. We can do what we want, when we want, how we want, for the most part, as long as it's legal. That is just a lot of liberty that you don't experience in other cities. In other cities, there's expectations like this is how you do things. But here, you're really free to be your own unique person. I love that. What's a memory you cherish from your time with Fix West Texas? The best memory I've had has to do with the distemper outbreak that we just went through. It was 2 days of being at the shelter 12 hours a day. It was overwhelming in so many ways, but the most overwhelming was gratitude to the everyday community member that came by to foster those animals. They not only trusted us that the animals weren't going to infect their own dogs, but they trusted us to continue treatment and testing of those dogs and eventually rehome those dogs. It was just so overwhelming to see the everyday person come forward and really help. That's what I go back to. If you let people know that you have a need, our community is really good about trying to meet those needs. It could have been a really tragic experience. Both Beth Meeks and I, when we said we were going to do it, we were like, what if nobody comes? What if nobody comes? I have to come, but we didn't know that. We didn't know everybody was coming and all the dogs would be saved. In fact, I'm making these little trophies for the people that helped with that. This is my second batch because there were so many, but it says Midland 4/21/24, 139 dogs saved. Then I have a metal flower placed on top, so then you just, like, set it on your desk and you can remember. It's been an incredible journey. We never really thought that it would take off this way, but we certainly are glad it is because we really hope we're not only lowering euthanasia, but really making a social change where pets aren't disposable. How can people become involved in Fix West Texas? They can get involved by going to our website and applying to be a volunteer. We also have a donation link if they want to become a monthly donor. We have a community event if they'd like to join us and give out information about Fix West Texas. We have adoption event if anybody would like to help us with adoption events. So there's a lot of opportunities if they want to get involved. What's next for Fix West Texas? We have built a 10,000 square foot clinic that is right between Midland and Odessa of 191 behind Mid-Cities Church. We'll be moving in probably by the end of August or early September. We were actually going to move in July, but it got hit by that terrible hailstorm, so the roof has to be redone and some other stuff. We're going to be a little behind on that, but we'll be moving over there. It will just help us be able to serve more people, and it sets us up for being a resource here in Midland for perpetuity because we have an actual place. We're very excited about that. Over the years, we've expanded our services. We've started off with just spay and neuter and vaccinations. Now we don't only have those clinic services, but we do end-of-life euthanasia and we do curbside parvo treatments. We have our Pets in Need program, which is a pet pantry, and then funding for people that can't afford full price. We have our donations, where people the first time have a responsible way of rehoming either their pet or find a pet by going through us and making sure it gets fixed, vaccinated, microchipped, and then goes to another home and bypasses the shelter or never has to go to the shelter. Is there anything you want to add? We're excited about our partnership with the City of Midland. Historically, the city itself has dragged its feet a bit on advocating for spay and neuter. For the first time in the past 1 to 2 years, they've made some slow, small steps forward. We really champion that. We know they are not necessarily moving at the breakneck speed we are, but we respect the speed that they're moving. They recently started their own pet pantry. They get the food from us through Greater Good Charities. So we really do value that relationship and are excited to see the city step up and lead the way into the future. We really need the city to join us and be vocal and ask residents to spay and neuter. ERCOT predicts demand to double, by Emily Foxhall, the Texas Tribune. The state's main electric grid operator has sharply increased its prediction for how much power demand will increase in coming years. If it's accurate, the state would need to be able to provide nearly double the amount of power within 6 years. Two factors led to the higher forecast. A new law allows officials to count companies' requests for grid connections before they are finalized, and there has been a significant rise in requests from large users, such as data centers, hydrogen production facilities, and oil and gas companies that are electrifying their operations. On top of that, the state's population continues growing. Electric Reliability Council of Texas President and Chief Executive Officer Pablo Vegas told state lawmakers in a Senate Business and Commerce Committee hearing last week, repeating information he shared with the ERCOT board in April. All of that is putting together a picture of a very significant different demand growth that is forcing us to really rethink how we're looking at planning to make sure we can meet those needs and continue to deliver on the expectations of all Texans, Vegas told lawmakers. Demand on the power grid hit a record of 85 gigawatts last year, which was the hottest ever recorded in the state. ERCOT experts now say demand could reach around 150 gigawatts by 2030. More than a third of the forecast growth is coming from the Permian Basin, where oil and gas operators are converting operations to run on electricity instead of gas or diesel. Much is also coming from large users such as data centers that are powering artificial intelligence and cryptocurrency mining. Some are requesting several times more power than what the city of Lubbock now uses, according to ERCOT. The new estimates raise crucial questions such as whether large power users that can ramp up and down need greater state oversight. The committee's chair, State Senator Charles Swertner, Republican, Georgetown, said in an interview. One Bitcoin mining company last year reported making millions of dollars in the electricity market by selling back pre-purchased power when grid conditions became tight, which provoked the ire of some Texans who saw their power bills rise. I think we need to rise to the challenge of getting the needed generation onto the grid, Swertner said. But there is eventually a prioritization that could be discussed, and obviously Texans, their families, their homes, their businesses are the most important individuals, the most important clients for electricity. In a post on X after the hearing, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick said the legislature needed to take a close look at data centers and crypto operations. We want data centers, but it can't be the wild west of data centers and crypto miners crashing our grid and turning the lights off, he wrote. Electricity experts said the projected growth also makes clear that the grid will need more transmission lines, which are paid for by customers and take more time to build than many of the facilities that want more power. There's no question there's going to be additional need for generation, said Michael Lozano, a communications and government affairs officer for the Permian Basin Petroleum Association. But I think the most important thing right now that we're trying to address is the lack of transmission. Previously, to plan for future transmission needs, ERCOT could only count power users that signed agreements with the utility, said Mark Bell, president of the Association of Electric Companies of Texas. House Bill 5066 allowed grid operators to count potential users without a signed agreement if the utility considered it a serious project and very likely to interconnect, Bell said. Judging whether data centers will actually be built in Texas is difficult, said Katie Coleman, Energy Counsel for the Texas Association of Manufacturers, which represents large power users. Companies that want to build data centers could be shopping around for places to do business, she said, by making requests in multiple places where they might build. Cyrus Reed, conservation director of the Lone Star chapter of the Sierra Club, said demand could be lower and some projects never materialize. There's a lot of unknowns, Reed said, but it's what they're putting into their system for planning purposes. If I were ERCOT, I'd rather overpredict so that we have more capacity so we don't have a shortage. said Michael Weber, an energy resources professor at the University of Texas at Austin. It's hard to say whether it's hype or whether it's real. The state's grid has come under intense public and legislative scrutiny since 2021, Winter Storm crippled its operations, causing power outages across the state for days amid freezing temperatures that left millions of Texans without lights or heat. Hundreds died. Lawmakers responded by requiring power facilities to prepare better to operate in extreme weather. They put $5 billion into a fund to give low-interest loans to companies that plan to build gas-fueled power plants, which legislators prioritized because they can provide power quickly on demand. State regulators are accepting applications for that money now. Senator Nathan Johnson, Democrat Dallas, a member of the Senate committee, said the need to meet higher demand could push innovation with renewable energy, drive more programs for people to use less power by making their homes or businesses more efficient, and spur ways for people and small businesses to get paid for using less power in tight times. This massive increase in load is going to provide greater momentum behind some very good trends, Johnson said. Fan Drive for Seniors set for Saturday by Trevor Hawes, editorial director. The Tall City might be in a cooler spell for now, at least by Midland standards, but that doesn't mean the temperatures won't heat up again this summer. Many of Midland's homebound residents face threats to their health when it's hot, and not all can afford to run air conditioning. Some have a broken AC unit and can't afford to have it repaired or replaced. Others don't have an air conditioning at all. Keeping these Midlanders comfortable and safe is why Senior Life Midland is hosting its annual fan collection. Election Drive, 9 a.m. noon Saturday. You can purchase a fan and bring it to Senior Life Midland at 3301 Sinclair Avenue or Meals on Wheels of Odessa at 1314 East 5th Street, Odessa. Kathleen Kirwan Haney, executive director at Senior Life Midland, said they prefer fans that oscillate and have a stable base, such as a 28-inch three-speed tower fan and 16-inch three-speed pedestal fans. Box fans tend to fall over and thus can be unsafe. Fans will be delivered through Senior Life Midland's Meals on Wheels program. About 40 volunteers go out each day and deliver meals to 500 homebound residents. The program also serves as a wellness check for those they serve. Kirwan Haney says that the small gift of a fan not only will go a long way in keeping homebound residents safe, but that it's good for the soul. It doesn't take much to know that you are helping someone in need, she said. You'll know in your heart that helping a senior was worth it. In advance of the fan drive, Kirwan Haney said she wanted to thank the whole Midland community. It takes all of us to really make a difference. For those who can't participate in the fan drive Saturday but still want to help, Kirwan Haney said donations can be made on its website. West Texas Super Show to feature car show and live music. By Ben Schaefer, staff writer. The 2024 West Texas Super Show will be a day of automotive excellence, live music, and family-friendly entertainment. West Texas Super Show will take place on Saturday. Doors open at noon at the Ector County Coliseum. Presented by Showbiz West Texas and Que Buena 106.7 will host the show, which will feature over 100 cars on display, showcasing a variety of styles from classic cars to custom builds, according to Backstage Event Marketing. Attendees can look forward to car competitions, including Car Hop and Best in Show categories, with over $10,000 in cash and prizes available. Featured cars include Scandalac of Midland, which recently won Best of Show Luxury Award at the Lowrider Magazine Car Show in Albuquerque on June 2nd, Living Proof of San Angelo Malo 57, which will be on display for the first time in Odessa, Rotten Apple 61, which returns to car shows after a three-year hiatus, according to Backstage. Cars will be coming to Ector County Coliseum from all over the country to win awards that can lead to competing for world titles. In addition to a car show and live music with more than 50 vendors, vendors will be on site offering a wide array of shopping opportunities. Special meet and greet session with car mogul Georgia Javier Shorty, Ponce, and El Chivo of La Onda will provide fans with the chance to interact with their favorite personalities, Backstage stated. There will be existing live music performances into the evening on Saturday. Los Rielos del Norte, this legendary Norteño band, has captivated audience with their authentic sound and timeless hits known as El Puro del Norte. Los Rielos del Norte have been at the forefront of the genre for decades. Keith Nieto, a rising star in the Tejano music scene, Keith Nieto brings a fresh and dynamic performance style. His blend of traditional and contemporary influences makes for an unforgettable live experience. N.B. Ridaz. Bringing a mix of Latin hip-hop and R&B, N.B. Ridaz are sure to energize the crowd with their popular hits and engaging stage presence. Advanced adult, ages 13 and older, tickets are $35 and can be purchased at showbiztickets.com. Children under 4 are admitted free, and tickets for children ages 5 to 12 are $15 at the door. Tickets are available at showbiztickets.com. Texas formally exonerates Carrie Max Cook, by Zach Despart, the Texas Tribune. Carrie Max Cook is innocent of the 1977 murder of Linda Jo Edwards, the Texas Court of Criminals Appeals found, citing stunning allegations of prosecutorial misconduct that led Cook to spending 20 years on death row for a crime he did not commit. Cook was released from prison in 1997, and Smith County prosecutors set aside his conviction in 2016. The ruling Wednesday by the state's highest criminal court formally exonerates him. This case is riddled with allegations of state misconduct that warrant setting aside applicant's conviction, Judge Burt Richardson wrote in the majority opinion. And when it comes to the solid support for actual innocence, this case contains it all, uncontroverted. Brady violations, proof of false testimony, admissions of perjury, and new scientific evidence. Cook, now 68, became an advocate against the death penalty after his release. The ruling ends, as Richardson wrote, a winding legal odyssey stretching 40 years that was marked by bookends of deception. Prosecutors in Smith County and East Texas accused Cook of the 1977 rape, murder, and mutilation of 21-year-old Edwards. Cook's first conviction in 1978 was overturned. A second trial in 1992 ended in a mistrial, and a third in 1994 concluded with a new conviction and death sentence. The Court of Criminal Appeals reversed the second verdict in 1996, stating that misconduct by police and prosecutors had tainted the case from the start. The Smith County District Attorney intended to try Cook a fourth time in 1999, but settled for a plea deal, which Cook was released from prison, but his conviction stood. Until Wednesday, he was still classified as a murderer by the Texas justice system. Smith County District Attorney Jacob Putman did not immediately respond to a request for a comment. Cook could not be reached for a comment. The Court of Criminal Appeals opinion Wednesday noted numerous instances of wrongdoing by police and prosecutors. During the 1978 trial, the prosecution illegally withheld favorable evidence from Cook's defense team, and much of the evidence they did present was revealed to be false. One of the prosecution's witnesses was a jailhouse snitch who met Cook at the Smith County Jail and said Cook confessed to the murder. The witness later recanted his testimony as false, stating, "I lied on him to save myself." The prosecution also withheld that in exchange for that damning testimony, they had agreed to lower that witness's first-degree murder charge to voluntary manslaughter.
Bruno Hansen melded love of outdoors science into geology career. Credited as being the first to bring an environmental focus to the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, the story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. There were a number of firsts in Bernold M. Bruno Hansen's life. He was a first-generation American born to a Norwegian immigrant father and daughter of Norwegian immigrants in North Dakota. He was the first to bring an environmental focus to the American Association of Petroleum Geologists, where he served as president from 1986 and 1987. He was the founding president of the AAPG's Division of Environmental Geosciences. Quote, "He was interested in the environment and wanted the industry to be more environmentally aware," said his daughter, Gretchen Bakke. That focus on the environment earned him an award from Midland College and Keep Midland Beautiful in 1996, known as the Bruno Hansen Midland College Environmental Excellence Award, presented annually at the Permian Basin Environmental Regulatory Seminar. Bakke recalled how her father, who passed away at age 71 in the year 2000, and fellow geologist Will Green, who also served as AAPG president, went back to school in their 60s to get degrees in environmental science. Gretchen, second of his three children, which includes sister Karen and their late brother Eric, said geology was a perfect fit for her father's love of the outdoors. Quote, He was taking engineering classes, and an engineering professor told him, quote, "Since you like the outdoors, you ought to take a geology course." So he signed up for a geology camp, she recalled. It was a perfect fit. It also helped because his future father-in-law, Millward Miller, was a geologist. After graduating from the University of North Dakota, Hansen took a job with Magnolia Petroleum, now part of ExxonMobil, and was sent to Midland. Millward's daughter, Marilyn, a secretary to Magnolia's district geologist, had picked him as a favorite recruit from his picture and invited him to dinner. They were married 4 months later. He was soon called to active duty with the Army Reserve. He spent the next 2 winters at Camp Pendleton in Southern California and summers in Alaska, leading a survey party running latitude and longitude across the Alaskan Territory. During that first stint, he and 5 others spent 2 weeks lost in the fog on the Bering Sea. Also during that time, their first child was born. The Hansons then went to Wyoming, where Hanson earned a master's degree in geology, courtesy of the GI Bill, and welcomed second daughter Gretchen. He was then hired by Humble Oil and Refining and sent to New Orleans. During that time, he served a second stint in Alaska, volunteering for the team working up the surface geology. It was there that he was involved in a helicopter crash. In 1957, Humble asked him to open a district office in Anchorage, and third child Eric had arrived. Hansen was very involved in his children's scouting activities, frequently going on their camping trips, she said. He also frequently took his family hunting and camping, using the trips to show his children geological sites, she recalled. Quote, "He'd have these rock samples, and he would bring things home to show us," Gretchen recounted. "He had a very scientific mind. He loved learning about formations. When he was working, they did a lot more science," she said. He was also very personable. She described him as looking like John Wayne, quote, "but he was a teddy bear," end quote. In 1960, he left Humble to join a small consulting firm, striking out on his own in 1961 as a consultant and operator. Ultimately, he owned 3 cable tool rigs, had some successful wells in Crane County and deep wells in Pecos County. He also did some international consulting, working with companies from the North Sea to Nigeria. Deadline nears for DSL conservation programs. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin oil and natural gas producers with acreage that includes Dunes Sagebrush Lizard Habitat have only a few days left to enroll in a conservation agreement. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service on May 17th issued a final ruling listing the lizard as an endangered species under the Endangered Species Act, giving operators, ranchers, and others active in the lizard's habitat 30 days to enter a conservation agreement. At the time of the final, the service also found a critical habitat designation for the lizard was prudent but not determinable, giving the agency up to 1 year to propose critical habitat. Quote, "As you are well aware, the Permian Basin Petroleum Association has been working on the issue for about 15 years now," Ben Shepard, president of the PBPA, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, "In spite of the industry's significant and comprehensive efforts to conserve the habitat and the species, the service has chosen to list the lizard as endangered. The justification for the listing is flimsy at best. There are 3 different maps estimating the habitat range, creating significant confusion for operators and renters alike as to whether they are in the habitat. Dunes sagebrush lizard population data is almost non-existent, end quote. Shepard added that the association has been urging members to join one of the three authorized conservation agreements designed to provide protections, and participation in these programs has been very strong. Quote, in spite of these and other efforts, the service chose to list the lizard anyway. Unfortunately, this is another in the long line of punitive actions the Biden administration is taking against the oil and gas industry, he wrote. James Mayer, founder and chief executive officer of Green Century Exploration and Production, echoed that sentiment, commenting to the Reporter Telegram by email, quote, this listing appears to be another step by the Biden administration to harm the oil and gas industry. It's amazing to me that President Biden and his Democratic Party claim to be advocates for the poor and the downtrodden, yet their policies of scarcity that result in higher gasoline, diesel fuel, electricity, food, and housing costs hurt those they claim to defend hardest, those struggling to make ends meet, not to mention the harm being done to America, end quote. In reacting to the decision listing the lizard, the PBPA has stated that the decision is not supported by available science and flies in the face of state-sponsored conservation efforts, which includes the enrollment of hundreds of thousands of acres and the commitment of millions of dollars in both Texas and New Mexico to support the lizard. The PBPA also states that the decision is inconsistent with the service's own decision in 2012 to not list the lizard, a decision based on the creation of conservation agreements that the service deemed effective. Furthermore, PBPA notes that the service approved additional conservation efforts for newly active industry on the landscape. There are three conservation agreements that can be utilized for the lizard. In New Mexico, the DSL Candidate Conservation Agreement with Assurances is administered by the Center for Environmental Health Monitoring and Management. In Texas, the 2020 CCAA for DSL is administered by Canyon Environmental, and the Texas Conservation Plan is administered by the American Conservation Foundation. Velocity celebrates 5 years of invoice factoring. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. In 2019, Velocity Financial tapped an ancient form of financing, invoice factoring, to help oil field service companies finance operations. The company has just celebrated its fifth anniversary. The company was founded by oil field veteran Trip Womack when he saw service companies having trouble accessing bank capital even during good times. Sun Wright serves as chief executive officer and Irene Hinojos as president. Quote, it's been interesting with all the consolidation, Wright told the Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. While Permian Basin-focused Velocity serves companies of all sizes, he said there has been some shakeups among clients. One benefit of consolidation is business has been steadier, he said. But there remain opportunities. Quote, there's still hesitancy among banks to lend, and that's the gap we try to fill. People can pick and choose when to use invoice factoring. It may be they don't want to use a bank, or they're a startup company and not ready for bank financing, he said. It would be nice to see more bank capital invested in the industry, he said. Invoice factoring involves companies purchasing invoices directly from their clients. In the Permian Basin, this is frequently used by service companies so they don't wait 60 to 90 days to get paid, and Womack says clients like that flexibility. Velocity currently serves 40 clients, 80% of whom are in the oil and gas industry. The company looks at deals up to $5 million a month, but can do bigger, he said. One thing that differentiates Velocity from other factoring companies is its simple fee structure, transparency, and lack of exit fees. Coming out of the pandemic, he said business grew quite a bit and has been steady in the last year. Quote, "We're seeing more business, more startups, more activity," he said. Clients range from staffing companies to transportation companies to manufacturers as well as service firms. Quote, "That's the great thing about the Permian Basin. There's no shortage of entrepreneurs," he said. He credits his father's entrepreneurial spirit with seeing the need for Velocity and for building a great factoring team. Quote, "Our goal is to become the best factoring company in the Permian Basin, and I feel we have the team for that," he said. "We plan to continue doing what we've been doing, building a great business," end quote. Old well spewing foul black water. The story was written by Amanda Drain. Foul black water has erupted from another West Texas well in the same area as one that flowed toxic water for weeks and inspired a controversial no-fly zone in December. The latest well, discovered Saturday in northern Pecos County, is about 14 miles from the unusual Crane County well that erupted in 2022. It's roughly 5 miles from the so-called Lake Bomer, the infamous ever-growing 60-acre body of poison water spewing from an old wildcat well. It's the latest sign of trouble under the aging oil fields just north of Fort Stockton, where water under pressure can travel underground, at times carrying radioactive elements, chemicals, and other oil field waste, until it finds the path of least resistance to the surface, often an unplugged well, and bursts through. A spokeswoman for the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates the state's oil and gas industry, said crews have been at the site in Pecos County since Monday, working to plug the orphaned oil well. Quote, "We are containing and removing the fluids and preparing to plug the well," she said Thursday. The state is treading water with its list of more than 8,000 orphaned oil and gas wells, which are neglected wells left to rot by oil companies that have gone bankrupt or no longer exist. The commission's crews are working steadily to plug orphaned wells, yet the list is growing just as fast. Skyler White, who owns the Pecos County property, said the latest well is just one of about 250 orphaned and neglected oil wells threatening to spring to life across his 20,000-acre cattle ranch. Quote, "You just never know when one's fixing to fail," he said. The Railroad Commission has plugged 9 wells on his ranch this year, White said. 6 of the 9 were trickling out dirty water, but this is one of the worst he's seen on his property. Quote, "This one's by far flowing more than all the others combined," end quote.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, June 15th, 2024. Religion. Wise and Foolish Builders Parable, Edifying. Reverends Weeks and McQuestion Emphasize Building Faith, by Bob Campbell. Jesus told the parable of the wise and foolish builders in Matthew 7, 24 through 27, and Luke 6, 46 through 49, to show that one must prepare for the storms of life, or possibly face destruction. The Reverends Joe Weeks and Mark McQuistion say the best preparation is to read the Bible, pray, go to church, and increase one's faith in God. Real life is filled with stormy days, said the Reverend Weeks, co-pastor of Connection Christian Church. Infuse your faith with spiritual discipline so that when the rains do come, you will have a better chance of survival. Jesus told this parable because he had challenges throughout his ministry, and he knew what real life was like. Weeks said the story about the foolish builder who built his house on sand and the one who built on rock refers to people who depend on things like material possessions as compared to those who rely on Jesus and his teachings. It's a cautionary tale for the modern Christian because we can't rely on our faith in trying times if we don't strengthen it along the way by engaging with the faith community in regular worship and developing our spiritual discipline through prayer and reading the Bible, as well as practicing kindness, good stewardship, and generosity, he said. Weeks said he had conducted funerals for people whose relatives had crises of faith because they had not previously invested in their faith. You can't retire and suddenly have a 401k as a resource if you haven't invested in one along the way, he said. The story, as related in Matthew, says in part, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." The Reverend McQuistion, pastor of the First Church of Nazarene, recently had his faith put to the severest test imaginable when he underwent treatment for stage 4 stomach cancer in Houston and Siloam Springs, Arkansas. "I read Psalm 107:20, which says, 'He sent out his word and healed them. He rescued them from the grave,'" McQuistion said. "This storm was the worst I ever had, but God healed me." Jesus told this parable so people would see that they had to understand what God said, or they would be foolish. The pastor said people often don't prepare for trouble in their finances or relationships and are crushed when trouble comes. The most foolish person of all is the one who has not prepared for the final judgment, he said. When you die, are you ready to go before your Maker or not? Build your life on the foundation of the Word of God, which is true and solid and never changes. A Happy Marriage by Tracy Villatoro, worship leader at Victory Church, Odessa. It only makes sense that I would write about marriages today because today is my and my husband's anniversary. It is mind-boggling to think that a man from Guatemala and a woman from Dallas, Texas, would find each other in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was traveling the states singing at different churches while my husband was a pastor in Virginia. He just so happened to hear me singing online and then invited me to sing at his church. As I walked through the airport getting ready to meet him for the first time in person, there was a huge sign in the airport that read, "Virginia is for lovers." Oh my goodness, my heart pounded. Shortly after I passed that sign, there he was, standing in the distance, waiting for me to walk toward him. I don't know about him, but for me, it was love at first sight. 1 year later, we were married. I have learned a lot over the past several years. Some lessons have been as no-brainer, while other lessons have been downright hard, with me kicking every step of the way. But I have found that as I obey the Lord in each lesson he teaches me, blessing always occurs. One thing I have learned is that the only way our marriage will ever survive is if we put the Lord first. By survive, I mean have a happy marriage. The Lord comes before my husband, kids, grandchildren, etc. 1 Corinthians 13 tells us if we do not have love, we are the same thing as a noisy bell. We are nothing without love. I may be in love with my husband, but I must also show my love to him each and every day. I need to be patient and kind to my husband. This has been one huge lesson I've had to personally learn. I'm sure everyone is thinking, you're a pastor's wife, and you're not patient and kind to your husband? For the most part, I am, but I do have my moments, LOL. Another thing I have learned is that we need to do daily devotionals, separate, as well as together. Doing this has brought us so much closer and has caused us to be much happier. A husband and wife also need to worship the Lord together every week in a local church. Even if my husband was not a pastor, he and I would still have the practice of attending church every Sunday, worshiping the Lord together. This is vital for a happy marriage. Absolutely imperative. We give all the glory to our Lord God. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, New International Version. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. A Happy Marriage by Tracy Villatoro, worship leader at Victory Church, Odessa. It only makes sense that I would write about marriages today because today is my and my husband's anniversary. It is mind-boggling to think that a man from Guatemala and a woman from Dallas, Texas, would find each other in Virginia Beach, Virginia. I was traveling the states singing at different churches while my husband was a pastor in Virginia. He just so happened to hear me singing online and then invited me to sing at his church. As I walked through the airport getting ready to meet him for the first time in person, there was a huge sign in the airport that read, "Virginia is for lovers." Oh my goodness, my heart pounded. Shortly after I passed that sign, there he was, standing in the distance, waiting for me to walk toward him. I don't know about him, but for me, it was love at first sight. 1 year later, we were married. I have learned a lot over the past several years. Some lessons have been as no-brainer, while other lessons have been downright hard, with me kicking every step of the way. But I have found that as I obey the Lord in each lesson he teaches me, blessing always occurs. One thing I have learned is that the only way our marriage will ever survive is if we put the Lord first. By survive, I mean have a happy marriage. The Lord comes before my husband, kids, grandchildren, etc. 1 Corinthians 13 tells us if we do not have love, We are the same thing as a noisy bell. We are nothing without love. I may be in love with my husband, but I must also show my love to him each and every day. I need to be patient and kind to my husband. This has been one huge lesson I've had to personally learn. I'm sure everyone is thinking, you're a pastor's wife, and you're not patient and kind to your husband? For the most part, I am, but I do have my moments, LOL. Another thing I have learned is that we need to do daily devotionals, separate, as well as together. Doing this has brought us so much closer and has caused us to be much happier. A husband and wife also need to worship the Lord together every week in a local church. Even if my husband was not a pastor, he and I would still have the practice of attending church every Sunday, worshiping the Lord together. This is vital for a happy marriage. Absolutely imperative. We give all the glory to our Lord God. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8, New International Version. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. Nadab and Baasha, kings of Israel. 1 Kings 15 and 16. Nadab, son of Jeroboam, became king of Israel in the second year of Asa, king of Judah, and he reigned over Israel 2 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, as his father had done. Baasha, son of Ahijah of the house of Issachar, plotted against him, and he struck him down at Gibbethon, a Philistine town, while Nadab and all Israel were besieging it, and succeeded him as king. As soon as Baasha began to reign, he killed Jeroboam's whole family in keeping with the word of the Lord given through his servant Ahijah the Shilonite. Because of the sins Jeroboam had committed and had caused Israel to commit, and because he provoked the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger. Baasha. It was in the third year of Asa, king of Judah, that Baasha, son of Ahijah, became king of all Israel in Tirzah, and he reigned 24 years. He did evil in the eyes of the Lord, walking in the ways of Jeroboam and in his sin, which he had caused Israel to commit. The Lord spoke to Baasha through Jehu, reminding him that the Lord had lifted him up from the dust and made him leader of his people Israel. But he had walked in the ways of Jeroboam and caused God's people Israel to sin and to provoke him to anger by their sins. As a result, God was about to consume Baasha and his house and would make his house like that of Jeroboam. Dogs will eat those belonging to Baasha who die in the city, and the birds of the air will feed on those who die in the country, Jehu told him.
ECISD students recognized with awards. 5 Ector County ISD students were presented with Pathways by One Objective Scholarships and an additional scholarship in honor of Anthony Bolton on Wednesday. The Anthony Bolton Scholarship honors Bolton's legacy by supporting students who have shown resilience, leadership, and dedication to their studies, a news release said. Director of College and Career Readiness, Riku Enriquez, said the Pathways by One Objective Scholarship recognizes students who have demonstrated academic excellence, personal strength of character, and perseverance. Recipients were in their senior year of high school. They were Rihanna Coker from Odessa Collegiate Academy, who is going to Texas Southern University, Ivania Mentosino Rios, a Permian High School graduate who will be going to Odessa College to start and then University of Texas Permian Basin, Alexia Noda Rodriguez, a PHS graduate who will be starting at Odessa College, Kubra Kokek, a New Tech Odessa graduate who will be going to UT Austin, and Ashlyn Elliott, a PHS graduate who will be going to Sam Houston State University. They will each get a $5,000 scholarship. Jeremy Willard of the One Objective said, "The organization started almost 5 years ago by a group of men in the community from various backgrounds that had various challenges throughout life. Their goal was to come together as a way of supporting ECISD students and show them a positive pathway to success in areas outside of athletics or entertainment. They hold fundraisers throughout the year. One of them is a golf tournament, and that's where they get most of their funds," Willard said. "We want to show them that there are hardworking individuals in all different areas and walks of life, that you can make a positive impact on your community, and it doesn't have to be in these particular areas. It can be elsewhere." So the idea behind the scholarships was to give these students a pathway to their success, Willard said. Part of getting the scholarship was to write an essay. They looked at GPA, extracurricular activities, whether they were work-related or in school. Willard said all the essays were very well written and it was tough to decide on scholarship recipients. He added that the students will make a positive impact on the community and the world at large. Enriquez said essays had to be 250 to 500 word essays describing adversity they had gone through or something they had overcome in their lives, the way to accomplishing their high school graduation and ultimately acceptance into college. Students who are in 12th grade are eligible for the scholarships and they needed to be accepted to a college or university already, Enriquez said.
Suffocated girlfriend finally calls it quits. Dear Abby, my girlfriend and I broke up after 6 years. Both of us have children from marriages that ended 7 years ago. We reached a point a year and a half ago and started looking for a house together. After realizing we couldn't afford what she wanted in a home for our blended family, our relationship became strained. The last year has been our worst. As she suffered through job loss and other outside forces affecting her mental health, I tried to offer her more support, but she felt suffocated. I am sometimes too intense trying to find solutions, even when she says she needs space. I have not kept up my end of giving her space. We have had the best connection of our lives, so seeing her in pain has me distraught. She says she isn't able to give what I need in our relationship while I have strived to be a good teammate in her times of need. Now she says she is done because I didn't give her space. She is the love of my life. What do I do during this crushing and devastating time of my life? Dazed in North Carolina. Dear Dazed, I'm sorry things didn't turn out better for you. You and your girlfriend have very different communication styles. She wanted to vent and be heard. You felt compelled to find solutions to her problems. When someone says they need space, it often means the person feels pushed or smothered. It can also mean they want to dial back the relationship or may have met someone else. Right now, your steps should be a giant one backward. Increase your exercise schedule, spend time with friends, and do not sit around alone and brooding over something you can't change. If the two of you manage to get together again, I urge you to get into couples counseling so that this kind of heartbreak doesn't happen again. Dear Abby, several months ago, I let the 39-year-old son of a dear friend move into my basement, Jason, pay me rent plus utilities. Last week, he informed me that he is not vaccinated for COVID. He was drinking at that time. Since my husband passed away with COVID in his system 2 years ago, I told Jason he would need to get vaccinated or find another place to live, but now I'm not sure he remembers the conversation. How should I handle this? I don't want to alienate his mother or him, whom I love like a son, over this. Health Conscious in Colorado. Dear Health Conscious, ask Jason if he remembers the conversation you had in which he mentioned that he has not been vaccinated for COVID. If he doesn't recall having made the statement, remind him, then tell him that when your husband passed, he had COVID in his system, that you do not want to risk being exposed to COVID, and that if he wishes to continue living with you, he will have to stay current on his vaccines. This need not to be a confrontation if you approach the subject calmly. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.